Hello and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And we are once again joined by our good friend, Martin.
Hello.
For this Thursday episode. We are back. We just had a whole hell of a conversation that part of it was recorded, part of it wasn't.
We talked about actual crazy people.
Actual crazy people.
More Star Trek.
We got our Star Trek talk out of the way, so it's not going to infiltrate the episode this time.
Talked about some casting for Dune Messiah. Yeah,
just so hard.
Not part three. No, it's part Messiah. Three. It's Messiah, but...
So, yes, we're here. We're doing it. We're back here for minute 118 through 119.
We're doing it.
We're doing
it. Do
it. Yeah.
Do it.
You know, I'm just going to bring a little Star Wars into this.
Misa going to like that.
All right. I'm out of here.
So, when the Emperor gives his command of do it. He was also, he was just as vague as Jessica was.
No, he wasn't, because fucking Anakin had his and Dooku's lightsabers at Dooku's neck. Yeah. There was no misinterpretation of what it meant there.
Imagine
Anakin Skywalker just stopping and shedding a single tear and saying, bring me the water.
Bring me water of life.
I was just about to say, imagine if Anakin turned off his lightsabers and then stuck his finger into Dooku's mouth.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's the crossover we need.
Is it?
So Wait, hold on. Would he stick his robot finger or his flesh finger?
Absolutely his robot finger.
Okay, cool.
So, but then, in that case, suddenly it's not Anakin's story. He's not the chosen one, but Dooku is, because he's the Kvisatz that's Haderach.
I think so. I think that's how it works.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yep. And then somehow Ben Quadraneros is there.
All right. Anyways, we're talking about minute 118 through 119. And we left off with Paul sitting by a pool.
Yes. Which is what I'll be doing this evening, and I'm very excited about it.
I'll be staying inside, because it's, even though it's getting cooler, it's still hot as fuck outside for us. So, but for the first time in this whole movie, Jessica acts like a mother.
Yeah.
Kind of. Hear me out, because the first thing she says to Paul is, I'm sorry about Chani.
Sounds like she says, I'm sorry about Chani.
Yeah. Shawnee.
You feel like she meant it?
Kind of.
I'm not debating, I
feel like there was a little bit of sincerity in her voice.
I'm not
voice
debating that, like, she did, but it also could have been like, just, you know, what do you say at that point?
Like, maybe it was like, I don't know how opener to open a conversation, yeah, exactly, with my now like godson that can see into many possible futures, like.
But she doesn't know that
what
yet,
I'm
though
gonna say.
She doesn't know that yet, though. She doesn't
not
know.
Not yet. Not yet.
Yeah.
But.
And then, yeah, Paul responds with, "She'll come to understand. I've seen it." And I think this is when it really starts to dawn on Jessica that she now has two cryptic ass kids that she has to deal with.
Yep. So. Two fucking weirdo freaks.
Yeah, so she's really collecting in them at this point.
Yeah. And she asks for clarification. You can see.
What?
Yeah. fucking excuse me. Yeah. And Paul, in just the most deadpan, emotionless way, says that he can see, you know, all these different possible futures, and that their enemies are surrounding them, and
he's moving his hand.
Yeah, he's doing like hand movements and stuff. He's learning how to like move himself while he's wearing his VR goggles, so he's not like going full motion yet, so he doesn't hit his hand into something. But Paul does say that, you know, he does see a way, a very narrow way through, and he, you know, takes his right hand and just kind of like points it forward.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I guess that's what you do when you suddenly have like a higher level of consciousness unlocked, is just weird hand motions and talk super like unemotively.
Well, he's kind of always been doing this with, when he's talking about like his prescience and his when he starts getting into this like mode.
Yeah.
He's always been kind of monotone, kind of weird sounding. So this is just, it was like an extra like 15% on top of that.
I'd say more like an extra 50.
All right.
Like he's really laying the weird on here.
A little bit more vocal fry.
Yeah. But not the like California, like, fry kind of.
What are you doing here?
What are you doing? And then we have our big revelation.
We're getting there. Yeah.
So as Paul's talking about all of his many possible futures where the enemies are surrounding them, but he finds a narrow way through. Mm-hmm. We get a very brief flash cut of a Chris knife hilt,
mm-hmm,
pressed against someone's body. We don't know who.
It's a gloved hand.
Yeah.
As well.
Spoilers. And Paul's notably not wearing gloves right now, at least. So.
Yeah, I don't know the significance of the gloved hand.
Yeah. It's Michael Jackson, actually.
See, I went to Dr. Strangelove.
Oh.
And the gloved hand.
Oh, okay.
Yes, our enemies are all around us. So many futures. Do they prevail? And then my next note is, John has the rest of the quote. So, Sean, do you have the rest of the quote?
Jesus, yes.
I knew it, see? I knew it.
The visions are clear now. I see possible futures all at once. Our enemies are all around us, and in so many futures they prevail. But I do see a way. There is a narrow way through.
Come on, say it, say it. Say the golden path, just say it.
Nope, you're gonna have to wait until the next movie.
You think golden path, really?
I think that's what he's alluding to right here.
Oh no, I don't.
No.
No?
No.
No.
Not even the early beginnings of it?
No. Paul finding himself in succeeding against Vladimir Harkonnen is not Golden Path.
I mean,
Golden Path is laying the foundation for saving, being the tyrant that he or Leto II would have to be to effectively save humanity from this trap of stagnation that it's fallen itself into. Mm. That's the Golden Path.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't see Golden Path either. One thing that kind of came to me from this is less Golden Path and more, and maybe I'm seeing too much into this, but more about how Paul's visions work in movie, because I think they work differently in the books. So maybe I'm seeing too much into this, but in my mind, before the spice agony, Paul's visions were kind of almost metaphorical. And my favorite example of that is his visions with Jamis in part one.
Jamis, yes.
I'm sorry, Jamis, yes. DJ Jamis. Where he has like at least three, maybe even more separate visions with Jamis. one of them, you know, Jamis killing him. Another one, mm-hmm, maybe him killing Jamis. Definitely there's a vision where there are like two of them in the desert, and Jamis is kind of teaching him the ways of the desert. And so in my mind, when they, you know, Amtal rule it out and they go Jamis dies. And despite them leaving out the I'm a friend of Jamis scene, Jamis kind of taught him the ways of the desert, like in a very metaphorical sense, but Jamis taught him something about life, death, about life on Arrakis. So his vision of them being in the desert kind of amicably and Jamis talking to him came true in a sense. And after the spice agony, the visions become literal. So what he sees is actual future. And I think that's why the kind of cut to the Chris knife and someone's chest is, like, spoilers for a minute, 152 to 153. But that's an actual frame from, I think it's a zoomed in frame, but it's an actual frame from later on in the movie. And that kind of just, I felt like it proved my theory about pre-spice agony, metaphorical visions, possible futures, and post-spice agony, very literal. These are the kinds of things that can happen. If I decide this, this will happen. If I decide this, this will happen.
Right. Yep. Okay.
And so narrow way through is there's a multitude of decisions and there's kind of only a couple that leave us being alive and succeeding. Yeah.
Paul's decision trees now are very direct instead of just kind of murky.
Okay. I concede my golden path statement.
Nice try, nerd.
Also, canonically, I think golden path comes up in Children, I think, the first time. Like, not even Messiah mentions golden path.
Okay. So I don't think we'll ever get a an on-screen golden path then.
Yeah. And maybe some of the comments.
Unless they do what the sci-fi miniseries does, where there's, like, in Messiah, there's the weird, like, visions that Paul has where he sees a more grown-up Leto, which also wouldn't necessarily make sense for him to see Leto grown up because Leto is also Leto. I don't know. Like, that's, I think, one of the weirder things that the sci-fi miniseries does with...
Time travel gets weird.
Yeah, with Paul's visions of his children. Because it kind of defeats the purpose of the big thing at the end where, like, Leto appears to Paul finally after he's born and says, "Father, use my eyes."
Mm, yeah. Spoilers.
I would assume if you're this far into the Dune Minute, you're probably, you know, pretty well read on what's going to happen.
Someone listening to this is like, "The fuck are they talking about? is his kid going to give him his eyes? The fuck? Why doesn't he use Tlilaxu eyes?" That's a tale for another time.
Let's do a quick bet. Are we going to get a stone burner?
You can't not have a stone burner. You can't not have a stone burner.
I think we got it. I hope we do. They've made big swings and taken big stuff out.
I don't even care about the stone burner itself. Like, the effects of the stone burner I care about. Like, it doesn't make, like, you have, like, you're missing half the movie or half the story if you don't have...
Yeah.
Spoilers. Yeah. Paul. And his eyes.
Yeah. And I don't know. There's a lot of me that's, like, going into the third movie as being a little cynical. So I'm just like, what are they going to take out?
Yeah.
Which one of my favorite things are they not going to have in this movie?
I feel like the better question is, what are they going to put in? Cause like, left this movie, like, how will you stitch it all together again?
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you want Anya Taylor-Joy playing Alia, like, what's the time jump there? And how does that make sense? And how will you age Timothy Chalamet for that role then?
Yeah, I'm almost certain that they are going to do some kind of, like, spice accelerates aging, but also prevents aging, depending on when you take it. Yeah, they're gonna do some hand wavy magic with the spice on that one.
Yeah.
So back to this minute. Paul, after we get out of the scene with the Chris knife, he's kind of just like staring off into the distance at this point. And when he does kind of come back to, he changes the subject.
Completely unprompted.
Yeah, he changes the subject and he starts talking about their family tree. And he says, "I saw our bloodline, mother, written across time." Which is a cool way of saying that, I guess.
Yeah.
Jessica looks crazy concerned at this point. She's like, where is this going, man? And we cut to the scene of this little toe-headed baby, little blonde baby, smiling, laying on this little, like, black leather, almost, like a cloth.
No, it was silk.
Silk,
yeah,
okay.
Velvety, yeah.
And a shadow moves in and is being cast over this child.
There's a familiar humming in the background, too.
And the baby looks up, and whatever smile was on its face just goes away.
Yeah. Goodbye.
Yes, that is not super happy to see whoever's looming above it. And that's where the minute ends.
Who else would be large and looming?
I literally don't know. I've not seen the next minute. So.
Oh, gotcha.
So what do y'all think about this one? This was we finally get to talk to Paul and see how he's really doing after the spice agony. And yeah, what do y'all take away from this?
One thing that I noticed is that, unlike all of Paul's other visions before, there is no like orange pink, you know, filter on top of Paul's visions. It is all perfectly clear.
And I think that goes back to what Martin was saying. Yeah, the clarity or the veil has been lifted and he sees clearly now.
Yeah. And I think that is one of those moments where the movie does a really good job of showing, not telling. While Paul is telling, but it's one of those subtle things where, like, if you've been paying attention to how they portray Paul's visions, like, especially early on in part one, like when we see the vision of Duncan with the Fremen, there's all that pink orange hue around it, or the visions that Paul has of him fighting Jameis, where Jameis beats him and he beats Jameis and all that kind of stuff. That's all surrounded with the pink hue. Mm-hmm. But this is the first vision that Paul has where it's not there. And I think it's cool. A little attention to detail kind of thing.
Yeah.
For me, kind of rewinding a couple of seconds before that, when Jessica's asking, like, you can see. I know in the last couple of days, I was kind of shitting on Jessica asking shit that she should already know, but... This kind of makes sense to me because, like, yes, they had an idea. I mean, the Bene Gesserit had an idea of what the Kwisatz Haderach would be able to do. And they had, like, obviously they had a breeding plan to achieve that goal. But they, you know, they never had an actual person do it. Mm-hmm. They had assumptions about the abilities that Paul would have, but they never actually, like, they just don't know. And so... For Jessica,
they had someone get close once, but
yes, but we
not good enough.
Yeah, so that kind of half questioning, half statement, you can see it makes sense to me now that she confirms that okay, that's an ability that we expected you to have, and you indeed have it. Oh, cool, very good.
Yep.
Yeah. In terms
it's
of
interesting to see Jessica in uncharted territory.
Yes.
Because she's always been so controlled, like, or at least the actions have been very planned. But this seems like uncontrolled or uncharted territory for her.
Yeah, you're right. And it kind of, to that point, she knew what she wanted to do and she knew what she needed to do up until this point. Mm-hmm. Right? And now it's like, okay, what's next? She knew she needed to get Paul to this point.
There's no manual on the Kwisatz Haderach, I guess.
Well, there is Irulan's Manual of Muad'Dib if you want to check that out from your local Imperial Library. So there is literally a manual on Muad'Dib. You just have to wait a couple of years.
Yeah.
In the universe.
Get on the waiting list now.
But in terms of the visions, what's very interesting is Paul's talking, movie Paul is talking about clarity, and he has this narrow way, and he seems very certain that if he takes these decisions that... that's going to lead him to success, right?
Mm-hmm.
Compare that to Book Paul, who just woke up from the spice agony after 3 weeks, kind of exploring the galaxy, having much more knowledge about what's going on. around him in the future, in the past, and so on. And Paul kind of, in the same scene, when he contemplates what the next step is, he says, all paths lead into darkness. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. I think we need to go that way. I saw a lot of stuff. I know a lot more about the future. But the future's becoming as muddled for the guild as it is for me. So all the prescient beings in the universe right now are kind of hurling towards this one point in space and time. And no one knows what the outcome will be. Neither does Paul. So he knows that, that there's this pivotal moment to come. And we all hope he'll survive it, but we don't have the same amount of certainty in the books as we have now in the movie that, oh, there's a narrow way through. So I found that very interesting that I feel like in the movie, this is, for me at least, kind of the pivotal moment. And whatever happens after this, I can kind of lay back and say, okay, he's going to survive now. While in the book, they say, no, still not there yet.
Yeah. So when I don't necessarily like that in the movie, because what that does to me, and I'll give an example here. So in the Marvel Captain America movie, the first Avenger, I don't know. The very first scene of that movie is them finding Captain America. In the ice, right? So what that does is it cheapens the entirety of the rest of what you see and strips any kind of danger out. We know he's going to survive. I mean, we knew that going into it. It's a Marvel movie. They always survive.
Sure.
But it is any kind of danger that person is in, that Steve Rogers is in after that, he's going to be fine. We know. They find him later.
Yeah.
So... it's almost doing the same thing here.
Yeah.
Paul says, no, I got it. I know what to do. Everything that comes after this is planned, dear audience. I know what we're doing, and I have a way through this. Whereas in the book, it is like, I don't even know what's going on. Well, none of us do, you know? So it is. It still gives you that ambiguity and that gray area to work in. But the movie takes that away from you when Paul says, no, I got it. I see the path. I see.
And I distinctly, like, not to spoil any of the future minutes, but I distinctly remember there's a point of danger down the line. And as I am watching the movie for the first time, I immediately remember this scene and Paul saying, oh, I got it.
Yeah.
So whatever happens, even if it looks bad, I now have the certainty that it's a prescient being who said he's got it. So this must happen for him to succeed.
Yeah. No, it's unfortunate that it has to, you know, kind of be a, like, hey, we promise that, you know, I don't want to say the good guy because Paul is not a good guy, but the good guy's going to live and, you know, everyone's going to have their happy ending. It's not a happy ending. Spoilers.
Yeah.
It's a cross-universe genocide, but, you know.
Yeah, and maybe that's just a modern movie audience. I'm going to sound so like old man yelling at my cloud right here, but maybe like modern movie audiences don't gravitate towards things with that much ambiguity in them.
Well, what I was going to say though is like it almost seems like they're teeing up the rest of the movie to be all right. Now watch what the fuck happens when Paul, you know, unlocks his full prescience and it's just, now it's go time. Drive. Yeah. Basically. Yeah. No, that like, that's exactly it. It's, it's that like, we will destroy all terrorism. Now watch this drive.
Oh, geez. Oh, George and W.
George W. Bush was a piece of shit, but damn if he didn't fucking nail that drive. Would have been a really funny clip if he just completely like biffed it though.
That'd have been great. So yeah, I don't know. I think it was a decision made for the palatability of this movie, just to make it something that is digestible by a modern audience. Because if you keep all the ambiguity in, you get the reception that Lynch's movie did.
I get it. And I, you know, I can't even disagree with that, but like looking at some of the other movies that Danny Villeneuve did. Mm-hmm. Like, there's plenty of complexity and plenty of ambiguity, and they're still, like, you know, he's
2049.
He's as popular as he is mm-hmm. because he made smart movies, and smart movies require you not to hit us over the head with Grisa's Hard Rock Rise Up. Like,
I mean, Arrival took me maybe 2 or 3 watches to fully understand that movie.
And it's an amazing, like, it's visually great. Appealing, and it's a smartly written movie, and, you know, you don't need someone to hold your hand to lay it all out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you enjoy it more having that experience of figuring mm-hmm. out what's going on. Because you put kind of...
You put work into it.
Exactly.
Well, we're very much in an era of, I'm going to go watch a movie and then immediately go to YouTube and, you know, see a, you know, Dune Part 2 ending explained video or whatever. And it's like, no, just like sit on it for a little bit. Think about it. Get a little weird with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
this as two people who have spent many, many hours explaining every single minute of the Dune franchise.
Sure, but also, you know, looking at it on a minute-by-minute basis instead of just, like, I don't know, regurgitating the same points that everyone else makes. I don't mm-hmm. know. Maybe we do that, too.
I'm sure we do.
Yeah.
The other note on this is, when as he finishes... saying, like, there's a narrow way through. Maybe I'm seeing too much into this, but I felt like that's, again, kind of a book reference. Because, again, mm-hmm. it's in an epigraph from Princess Irulan talking about how Paul's prescience works. And it's like a chunky paragraph, but there's one sentence that kind of relates to this, where she says, and she's quoting Paul, "The vision of time is broad, but when you pass through it, time becomes a narrow door." And then she talks a lot about how his prescience can be kind of imagined as actual sight. And then obviously, if you're on a mountaintop, you see a lot. If you're in a valley, you see a mm-hmm. little. But that's the kind of narrow way through. I felt like that is potentially a book reference, that the vision of time is broad, but when you pass through it, time becomes a narrow door.
Yeah.
The hunter climbs the highest dune.
Thank you, Jonas. There you go. So two more things on one shorter bit, and that's kind of just saying the same thing that you two said a couple of times already, is when Paul says, "I saw our bloodline mother written across time." What, dude? This is coming from the same guy who goes up to gulls and, like, "What are you up to,
dude? What are you guys talking about?
What are you talking about?" Written across time.
Yeah, but see, now, like, his mind's, like, opened and expanded, and he's seeing the beauty and the horror, man.
You know, I have some experience with psychedelics.
I think we all do.
I get it.
I know you and I do. I don't know about... I don't want to say that Martin has also experimented and speak on his behalf.
I'm currently sitting in a vat of spice floating.
Ah, nice. Hell yeah.
Oh, that's what that orange tint on your camera is. Got it. Okay.
I remember a distinct time, because it was like my early 20s when this happened. And I remember after I first took LSD that... No, it was the mushrooms, excuse me. I felt like this a little bit. I feel like I talked like this for maybe a month or so.
You were written across time?
I was saying cryptic weird shit like this.
I was too high at the time to have, like, noticed a difference in what you were saying. Because that's when I was just fucked up the time.
We were both going through it.
But the other one, the actually kind of canonical and lore-related note is, like, "I saw a bloodline mother," right? And I think you talked a little bit about other memory last Wednesday episode.
Mm.
But I think you stopped yourself because you were like, maybe these book notes would be better this week.
And sounds so like just, something I do, yeah.
Yep.
Just to expand on that, except if you want to do other memory kind of in a later minute, then I can stop myself.
No, I think so. this... this is a perfect place for it, I think.
So, and there's obviously plenty of discussion both on Reddit and Blue Sky, and I assume other places as well, about other memory and what are the rules of other memory, because it gets confusing. Yeah. And like you do need to do a lot of hat canon to kind of stitch it all together, because I feel like canonically there's a lot of plot holes.
And well, it changes based on whose canon you're going off of too.
Not even like even within Frank's canon, like he uses other memory as the story needs him to use it. Like he changes up the rules quite liberally, so it's difficult to kind of pin him down. But yeah, I agree. Like especially Prophecy and the expanded universe, but the base rule of other memory is you get all the memories if you're a Bene Gesserit, like not even Paul at this point, just Bene Gesserit, Reverend Mothers, they get all their maternal memories. So they get the memories of their moms, their grandmoms, and so on, right? And the assumption that we're making, because it's never really super explained in the book, is that your predecessor's memory lasts until the successor's conception. Yeah, so you have all your memory, you have all your mom's memories as a Bene Gesserit Reverend Mother until you were conceived and so on, back in time, basically forever, because it's genetic memory. Mm-hmm. That's something that I think, if I remember correctly, Frank actually says that it is genetic memory. Maybe he phrases it differently, but that's it.
He says it, and then the encyclopedia kind of takes that phrase and runs with it to a great length.
So that's the baseline. And then even in Dune, the original Dune book, you have kind of an additional way to gather even more memories, and that's through kind of a telepathic connection. So, like, Jessica and the rogue Reverend Mother, Romalo, sharing, and Romalo kind of uploads everything that she has into Jessica.
Right.
That Dropbox folder's fucking huge.
and this is, again, like, this is in the original Dune, but again, it comes back, I can't remember if it's Chapter House or Heretics, but it comes back in a scene where Bene Gesserit, Reverend Mothers go and save other people's other memory through telepathic connection.
I think that's Chapter House. It's been so long since I've...
Yeah, it could be Chapter House. Heretics
or Chapter House.
So then, Paul, him being a Kvisatz Haderach, he can do what the Bene Gesserit cannot. He can access both lines. So he can access his paternal and maternal line basically until the beginning of time.
Right.
And this is something that we don't see him do, but we see Leto II do a lot, both in Children and definitely in God Emperor, where he just like, oh yeah, I remember 15 million bajillion quadrillion years ago when we all spoke French. For some reason, then we ate whatever. That's only in the core canon. And then where it gets weird is, not to spoil part three, is Alia. And also Leto and Ghanima.
Yeah.
And how they have, like, why does Leto and Ghanima have any other memory? They didn't go through a spice agony like Alia did. But they were, and kind of coming back to your hand-wavy spice stuff, they were exposed to a lot of spice, so therefore they woke up. But they're not going mad because Paul and Chani are protecting them from within.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spice kind of becomes like a Deus Ex seasoning.
Deus Ex cinnamon?
Yeah, it can be. It does whatever you need it to do.
Yeah. So to Paul's powers, then, when he says that the visions are clear, and then I think at one point, yes, when he's drinking the water of life, even in the movie, they're like, oh, now you know our past, so you can know the future type of stuff. He has basically full prescience, So he sees all possible futures as long as he's high up on a temporal mountain. He has all the memories of all of his ancestors, which must be fucking noisy. Plus, and this is the very weird shit, he has knowledge of the now, which is not really explained by Frank Herbert at all, but we see him kind of talk to Chani and Jessica when he wakes up in the book, saying, oh, yeah, the Emperor is above us and all the houses are here to kind of loot all of our spice and we need to prepare. And I don't really know what's going to happen, but I do know that they're already here. And I think kind of Stelgar or Fedaiken comes up and like, how do you know that? We just got word from our whatever. Like, oh, yeah. I've seen it because I see what's happening right now. And it's not really explained whether that power of his has any limitations. Like, does he see what's going on Gedi Prime right now? Can he see Fade getting dressed into his whatever battle armor? So it's just so weird. Basically, he's become almost omniscient at this point. Sorry, went on a small rant.
This is why we brought you on, to let you go on your tangents and, you know, talk about Dune.
I'm trying to think, like, if that's what the movie is implying. Well, first of all, no, I don't think that's what the movie is implying right now. I think they're only really implying that he sees, like, this... he can't see everything, but he sees enough to know that, you know, he sees a path through fighting with the Harkonnens.
Yeah.
Would it have been better if they had have made him trip out a little bit harder and really start to see, oh, I know everything in this movie?
No. I think it would have gotten too cerebral and too weird for most audiences at that point. And I think keeping it focused on here's what, like, in many futures, the Harkonnens win, but there is one very narrow path that we can follow to succeed. I don't think with everything that had gone on in part two to start like sprinkling the foundations for Golden Path it's too much too early.
Okay.
And you know, to Martin's point, Golden Path doesn't even get mentioned until Children, and
maybe that's just what I want. I just want the Golden Path
to
be here.
No, I want it too, and I want it to be weird, but I think they need to, you know, make that more of a Leto the Second cornerstone and have the save the conflict between Leto and Paul for if they ever do Children, for them to, or for Leto to confront Paul about basically being a bitch and not doing what he was supposed to do.
Yep.
Yeah, that's fair.
But also, if you want to headcanon your way out of this and why Golden Path isn't here, like, what I would say is, and I think that's true for Bene Gesserit in general, but for Paul as well, he has access to all of that knowledge. He doesn't know all of that knowledge at the same time. So he's not literally omniscient. He has access to it. So, like, the Bene Gesserit as well talk about how they have access to these others in their other memory. And Paul as well, he has access to a lot of prescience. He has access to now upgraded HD quality visions and also past bloodlines. But he actually has to, like, in a library, he has to go there and you know, search for a book and pick up a book and read that book before he can make decisions. So he doesn't have that kind of omniscience, and at least in my mind.
And the other thing, too, though, is, like, what is it in the book? It's, like, 12 years of galactic genocide. Like, that's going to fundamentally change Paul at his core as well. And I think that's where just he... I think that's where he starts looking for his way out and everything. And, like, then the, you know... To Martin's point, Paul starts going through his Rolodex of knowledge and is like, oh shit, what's this whole Golden Path thing?
Yeah. I think they describe it in the books, and please correct me if I'm wrong here, but as like a hallway with many doors, and inside each room is, you know, the memories of someone else in your past.
Yeah.
Are they Scooby-Doo running through this hallway where they go?
Absolutely be Scooby-Doo running through this hallway.
The scary bit is when people from those doors come out. That's the scary bit. Yeah. As long as yours could
that
be
would
doing
never
it.
Happen.
As long
when
as
would
yours
that ever happen to anyone in particular that we may or may not have seen for only a very brief time in this movie?
The shutout Mapes?
Yeah, how'd you know?
It's that one deaf guy on the ornithopter.
Exactly. And then to finish off, like in terms of weirdness, canonically what Paul has in terms of powers, and maybe like, again, I feel like you overhyped my lore abilities. I'm not a very smart man. I'm just a fucking nerd. But there's this piece after all of this is described about Paul knowing the future, the past, and the now. He goes on to say some maybe a little bit dated and sexist, but also kind of almost philosophical shit about how women and females are givers and they have this giving energy.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Down to the cells, they're givers, and men yeah. and males are takers. And so the place that terrifies the Bene Gesserit is not just that they can't look at the male line, but they can't look at the taker energy because down to their cells, they're givers because they're women. And then Jessica goes like, and so what the fuck are you? Are you a giver or a taker? And Paul is nonchalantly, because at this point, you know, he has nothing to prove. He's like, I'm at the fulcrum. I cannot give yeah. without taking, and I cannot take without giving.
I think we talked about the giver-taker thing in one of our prophecy episodes.
Yeah, I hate leaning back on this excuse, but the 60s were weird, man.
No, and just, to be honest,
it was a
like,
different time.
For me, I just don't know what this means, because this is a paragraph or maybe two of explanation of Paul's powers, and this this is included that he's both a giver and a taker, and I'm like, cool. Do you fly? Like, what do you do with that? Like, laser vision? What?
Look, as a bisexual, I understand. You want to play both sides.
Okay.
So. Yeah, maybe. Maybe I suppressed the memories, but I don't remember this ever really coming up later on as a, oh, because I'm a giver and a taker, I can do this and this and this. Yeah. As opposed to you plebs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it, I don't remember it coming up either, again. So this may have just been a weird thing that Frank Herbert wrote. And yeah, yeah, yeah. I think he was, I mean, he was definitely dabbling in substances as he was writing this.
Dabbling, brother.
I was being polite. So, I don't remember it coming up either though. And I think that's for the best.
Yeah. But just for kind of completeness of, what Paul can do, he can give and take. And you may interpret this as you want.
Yeah, there you go.
I think we give and take the end of this episode and wrap this up because we have one more for tomorrow, and we got some stuff to talk about tomorrow as well.
Absolutely, we will.
Let's call it here, but you can still find the Dune Minute online at duneminute.com on Blue Sky, and you can email duneminute@gmail.com. Also, don't forget, but in this episode and in every episode this week, we have links to Martin's website where you can go check out all of his awesome writing and everything. Big ol' nerd over there. So go support his work. He's awesome. And we'll see you tomorrow.
All right. See you then.
See you.